My guest at this time is Dr. Owen Strand. He's an assistant professor of Christian theology and church history at Boyce College at Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. He is also chair of gospel and culture at the school and president of the Council on Biblical Manhood and Womanhood. He joins me now to discuss the recent debates over religious freedom, what the role of the church and believers is in the debate, and how much Christians ought to be involved in policy debates versus evangelism. And Dr. Strand, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Greg. Great to be here.
Obviously, a lot of frustration about what happened in Indiana and Arkansas last week and in the general debate over how Christians are being treated and religious freedom are being treated in our culture these days. So in your estimation, are Christians being targeted more now in this country than at any other time? Or is that sentiment kind of a function of the fact that we're in the midst of a fierce debate right now?
Yeah, I think we definitely are in the midst of a fierce debate. I think what we've seen in American history, if I can generalize for just a minute, is a marriage of the First Great Awakening and the Enlightenment. And so you have Thomas Jefferson at the same table as Jonathan Edwards, and they're effectively working together for common purposes. But it appears today that the Enlightenment, with its call for neutrality and liberty and freedom, is triumphing our religious heritage. And what that means today, specifically, is that what is called erotic liberty is beating religious liberty in the public square. And so Christians, in a pretty unusual way, are being targeted for their views, and our religious liberty is very much imperiled in this day.
Dr. Strand, obviously much of the debate last week centered around whether or not somebody ought to have to bake a cake or make a pizza, but overall, how critical is religious freedom to the underpinning of this country and the ongoing work of the church?
That's absolutely right. I mean, religious liberty is what America's founded on. It's why the Pilgrims and the Puritans came here. They specifically were not granted full-fledged religious liberty in England, in the UK, and so they came to these shores specifically so that they could worship according to their conscience. And so this is often called the first freedom of America. It's the freedom, in other words, that grounds all the others, because if you don't have freedom to practice your religion, to be sensitive to your conscience, then really, what do other freedoms even matter? So this is the underpinning of America. It is the bedrock of this country. But at present, it looks like it's being dynamited. It's being attacked. And that's very concerning for many of us who are religious. This is interestingly pulling together a coalition of the religious along the lines of which has not often happened in America, and which I hope will only pick up in future days so that religious people will assert themselves and not lose their voice.
Talk about that a little more. What kind of coalition is coming together here?
Well, you see, for example, Catholics and Protestants last week, a number of key leaders, Robert George from Princeton University, and then Albert Mohler and Russell Moore, Archbishop Chaput from Philadelphia, coming together and signing a common statement about the importance of religious liberty. When you see something like that happening, you recognize this is not the 19th century. This is not Catholics versus Protestants in the sense that it would have meant, 150 years ago. We're recognizing that we need to be partners with those folks. Christians should even be thinking about partnering with Muslims on this cause, and Buddhists and others of different religions, not because we believe that our worldview differences are unimportant. We very much believe they are important and even eternally important. But we live here. We live in this country, and we recognize that something is imperiled which threatens all of us. And so it's entirely appropriate for us to push to come together in different ways, not collapsing our theological differences, but working together in the public square.
Dr. Strand, how is it that this particular issue, homosexuality, whether or not there's a constitutional right for same-sex marriage, and all the different aspects that go along with this issue, is the one that seems to be leading to this huge debate over religious liberty? Why the connection?
Great question. I think because homosexuality, more than other issues in the past, is so closely tied to personal identity. And I'm not exactly entirely sure why, but I'm guessing, here's my best philosophical guess, it's because homosexuality is so closely tied to the body. Our identity is so derived from our body. And I think that's some of what is coming into play. People want to be able to do with their bodies as they see fit. And so when others who are religious, broadly speaking, resist the full approval of same-sex marriage and transgender identity, we've recognized that this isn't going to be a gentlemanly dispute, so to speak, in past terms. This is an all-out battle for public square territory, and it appears that it's kind of going to be a zero-sum game, winner-take-all. And that's discomforting to many of us who have seen America carve out a unique identity among world territories, countries, nations, in which religious liberty is practiced by different people because of our first freedom. But that's all collapsing today at the feet of same-sex marriage, really.
Dr. Strand, later this month, we're going to hear arguments before the Supreme Court on same-sex marriage. By June, we're going to get a decision, and most people, given the last decision in 2013 and other rulings, suggest that it's probably likely that there's going to be nationwide same-sex marriage within a couple of months. So what will that do to religious freedom if, in fact, that happens?
It's going to very much change the nature of this country, and we've just got to be honest about that. We've got to look it full in the face and say America is going to change. It's going to mean that sexual immorality, as defined by the Bible and as we would understand even from natural design, is going to be enshrined in law, and that's going to mean that people are going to be shaped by these laws. Politics is going to influence culture, as it always does. And so this is going to have very deleterious effects for American culture and society in general. But here's what I would say. This is not the fall. The fall of Adam and Eve happened thousands of years ago. This is not the one problem the church is facing that it cannot overcome. If you study history and if you study Christian history, you see so many obstacles faced by Christians in the past. So often there's been this tendency to think Jesus must be coming because things are getting so bad. The reason Christians have jumped to that conclusion is not simply because their theology is a little off. It's because things have been so bad in their culture and their society. And we're in that kind of moment, and we've got to recognize that the Lord has placed us here to be gospel witnesses and to push for love of neighbor in the public square, to champion good policy, even if we lose in big terms for the Supreme Court. So we're going to keep on going. The band is not going to stop playing. It's time to put your head down and keep going. In the event that does happen.
What about specifically how churches respond to this? You have already New York Times columnists saying that pastors need to wipe homosexuality off the list of sins. Obviously, if the laws are changing here soon, that there's going to be more pressure. Some people think tax-exempt status will be threatened if standards aren't changed and so forth. So what's the best way for the church to brace for this?
The church has to keep advocating its position in the public square. It may feel like, you know, we're not going to win anything, so why do it? But we have to recognize that there's a ton of ground left to be claimed in this cultural divide, and we want to be very much plugged into upcoming elections. There's all kinds of good measures that have taken hold in the pro-life realm, in the marriage realm, at the state level. And so we don't want to just look at one verdict from the Supreme Court, which will be huge, but we don't want to assume that that's the only decision that has import for American public life. That's frankly not the case. So Christians need to continue to be very much involved in voting and in the political process, and they need to, you know, with a presidential election. If we could elect a conservative president, that would be fantastic, I think, in many respects, and maybe halt the momentum. And, you know, just one quick word here. If you lived in the 1840s, 50s, and 60s, you would have thought that slavery would be a part of America forever. It can feel like America is sliding into the abyss and will never recover. But look at what happened. Through a great fiery cataclysm, slavery was abolished in this country and the slave trade was ended. So, you know, I have hope. I believe in an awesome God who does awesome and unexpected things. And even if things do darken in our country, I would tell Christians to stay at their posts, as Chuck Colson used to say, and keep working.
We're talking with Dr. Owen Strand of Boyce College at Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. Just a couple of minutes left in our conversation here. And Dr. Strand, there are some, and I saw this being expressed last week during the big debate in Indiana, and that was that, well, sure, Christians obviously want to advocate for religious freedom. It's best for our society. It's best for the church. At the same time, though, they say that focusing on policy changes distracts from the larger mission of evangelizing souls, and when hearts and souls are changed for Christ, then obviously people will see things in a more biblical perspective than if you push for a religious liberty law at the state capitol. How do you approach that?
Yeah, I'm very greedy on this. I'm unwilling to choose one or the other and be forced, you know, to select only one entree or something culturally, if you will. No, I mean, if you look back in the past, Christians, for example, in the 19th century evangelized, to be sure. They planted churches and preached the gospel, but they also worked at the local, state, and national level to advance anti-slavery legislation. And you know what happened? It worked in the end. After a great war. The same thing happened in the mid-20th century with the civil rights movement. I mean, a lot of Christians who loved the gospel continued to preach the gospel, but also fought in different ways and advocated in different ways for full racial equality. You look at William Wilberforce, who wrote evangelistic pamphlets and loved the work of the church, the preaching of the gospel, Christ crucified and resurrected for our salvation, but also for over 40 years championed anti-slavery legislation in the UK. There is no, absolutely no divide between public square witness and work, policy work, and evangelism. We must recognize that the gospel creates both of those instincts. The gospel creates an instinct to share the truth about Jesus Christ with unbelievers, absolutely, but the gospel also creates this love for justice and righteousness and this love for neighbor, which means not simply baking cookies for your next-door friend, but also advocating for great policy and legislation such that human flourishing will advance. There's no tension here. We should not embrace any such tension. If we hear that there is tension, we should use the kind of argument that I just did to suggest otherwise.
Dr. Strand, a powerful argument. Thank you, sir, very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
I appreciate it, Greg. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Dr. Owen Strand is an assistant professor of Christian theology and church history at Boyce College at Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. He is also chair of the gospel and culture at the school and president of the Council on Biblical Manhood and Womanhood. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.